This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between, and they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino.
When Indigenous peoples aren't included in a data set, it functions as a type of statistical genocide. It's not a misnomer to call it a statistical genocide. If anything, it's a misnomer to just say like, oh, it's just missing data. What we measure is what we value. So it sends the message, you're not valued when you're not counted.
From Futuro Media and PRX, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, we are here mapping the Indigenous migrant languages of Los Angeles. For Janet Martinez, growing up Zapotec in Los Angeles didn't mean leaving her Indigenous culture and language behind.
For me, a lot of my introduction to being Zapotec in Los Angeles was my parents put me to dance in una danza para, you know, for a patron saint.
Every year on August 24th, they celebrate San Bartolomé, just as the Zapotec community has been doing in Sogocho, Oaxaca, in southern Mexico, for hundreds of years. And it was in those celebrations that Janet saw how her community came together.
We would practice every Saturday and Sunday, and we would have different people from the community come bring us food while we practiced. We had breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
But outside of those spaces, Janet didn't see her culture acknowledged.
It's one of those weird experiences because you know your community exists. You know that the language that your parents speak is different than Spanish or English or than any other language. And not being able to see that reflected ever anywhere is really difficult.
So in 2016, Janet and Odilia Romero founded Cielo, Comunidades Indígenas en Liderazgo, or Indigenous Communities in Leadership. It's an organization dedicated to bringing resources and visibility to migrant Indigenous people from Los Angeles.
We wanted to say, look, let's uplift the people in our community that are writing, that are creating, that are singing in our languages, that are writing in our languages.
But then the pandemic came, and when the lockdowns began,
one of the team members at Cielo called and said, hey, I know you're in human rights. What's going to happen to us during the pandemic? You know, they're shutting down the restaurant industry. I work in the restaurant industry. We work in the restaurant industry together.
It was something Janet knew firsthand.
My grandpa used to work at a hamburger hamlet and he spoke Zapotec, right? And I think that sometimes like we're not aware that the people that are preparing our food or that harvest that food are Indigenous and speak different languages. I think sometimes it's really easy to just say, well, they probably speak Spanish, you know, like they speak Spanish.
At Cielo, they knew no one was providing help to these migrant Indigenous communities. For the government, they're invisible. And they have been for a very long time.
There isn't a large push on behalf of the federal government or the census to collect the actual data of Indigenous people that are residing in the United States. When you look at the census data, it's just Latino, Latina. And I think that's where the risk is, that well, then how do you count the indigenous migrant communities? How do you even create visibility of a community that's not even counted? And they're counted under this label that essentially erases the linguistic diversity or the culture diversity. You don't know that you need to allocate resources or have educational campaigns that are specifically in indigenous languages if there is that gaping hole in data.
So they got to work. They created a fund to distribute cash specifically to undocumented indigenous people.
It was really, for us, rooted in this idea of we're not helping, no? Like, this is like a reciprocal relationship. Like, it's like our communal work for the communal good that we say in Zapotec, Guzuna. And it's that kind of working for the good of all, right?
They began an outreach campaign. But since there were no official records to locate the indigenous migrants who needed the help, they also had to get creative.
Essentially, it was a phone tree. Like, I would have people call me and say, hey, is it okay if I send the link to so-and-so? And like, you know, because they're this or this is their situation, or like they lost their husband, they lost their wife. And like, it just spread like that. It just spread like from word of mouth.
Cielo was connecting with so many more people than expected. And then Janet had an idea. They were going to count every speaker of a migrant indigenous language and put themselves on the map.
For us, it was really important to create this count and say, hey, we're going to start collecting our own data. If the federal government, if the state government is uninterested in counting us and creating visibility of indigenous migrant people, then we're going to do it ourselves. Who better than the community to create these solutions?
And now I'm going to hand things off to Janet Martinez, the founder of Cielo, who we just heard from, and Mariah So, a Diné cartographer from the Navajo Nation. And they're going to explain how they mapped Quiché, Mayan, Zapoteco, Cachiquel, Ayuk, and a dozen other indigenous languages from Mexico and Central America, all of which are spoken today on the streets of Los Angeles. And also, you'll have a chance to listen to some of the beautiful languages that exist in this area throughout the piece. So here's the story of the We Are Here map.
As indigenous people, indigenous migrant people here in the United States, we knew that we existed. We just were never given the chance to respond. We were just like, okay, what do we think are questions that would help long-term be a tool for the organization to advocate for indigenous migrants, people's rights? That's how we started. And from there, we said, what are things that we think are important, right? What's your preferred language? Is it English? Is it Spanish? Is it Zapotec? Is it Ayuk? It's not even a question that passes through people's minds. And it's such a simple question. We had a participation of around 2,500 people that we were able to take individual surveys with. And then we met with Mariah So at the UCLA Bunch Center.
Yat she'eya Mariah So yinishya, bilagana nishle, nak internet for hetlini bashishchin, bilagana ja dashache do lok a dashanala. I am Mariah So. I work at UCLA with the Bunch Center for African American Studies as a GIS specialist. It's a fancy way of saying I make maps mostly using computers, but not always. As a Diné person, you know, looking at a lot of the everyday maps that we have, I often feel like a sense of loss and devastation. Like even just looking at Google Maps every day, we see a lot of like street names that, you know, sometimes are like named after my people. And it's just kind of like, I'm not a street name. I'm a person. We're a people. We're a nation.
We were like, here's the data. Here's everything we've collected. We would really like to see language diversity. We want to show that there is language diversity in Los Angeles. And she said, perfect. I'm a cartographer. Let's build this map.
A lot of maps that we see every day, what sits in the negative space of them are indigenous death and loss. And so that's something that like I think about in trying to figure out ways to actively counter that. Although I'm not, you know, from the same communities as them, being like another indigenous relative, there are certain things that I think, I don't know, it's a different type of common language. I understand what it likes to be disappeared frequently from many spaces. and I understand the importance of preserving our languages.
My name is Javier. I'm from Los Angeles, California. I speak Zapotec, and my favorite word is yetgo, which means tamal.
Our maps represent nearly 2,500 unique households that applied for Cielo's fund, and that signifies nearly 11,000 individuals from over 30 different indigenous communities throughout Mexico and Central America. And that includes roughly 17 different languages.
And the languages are Zapoteco, Chinanteco, Quiche, Ayuk, Canjobal, Mam, Nahuatl, Mixteco, Maya, Acateco, Amuzgo, Cachiquel, Purépecha, Tzetzal, Tacuate, Ischontal.
In Kabaja an Sandra, la ina el estorizabal, utlinquatino bal haan echi. Li atina kulak chiku haan chanshakwil.
I think a lot of the assumptions that we make about who has the access to science or who gets to be experts really limits what we think is possible or even, you know, we're able to imagine in terms of like, you know, what a map is or what a map can be used for.
There was a lot of conversation about data, like how in many instances, indigenous communities aren't the people in charge of creating knowledge, of creating data, of creating information.
Being super mindful of how do we represent this data set, because it's a lot of it has to do with visibility, and visibility being a particular kind of power because, you know, in a data sense, that often translates to access to certain resources and rights. But on the flip side of that, we don't want to expose people's specific locations because that's a type of vulnerability. And so that's why the map is made using, it's called a dot density. We mapped the number of people in each household matched with the preferred language, kind of extrapolate out a little bit. So once we got a sense of, you know, how many people within each zip code preferred a particular language, we mapped that in a zip code. So say there's 20 of a particular language in a zip code. Well, those dots move and they don't stay in the same place every time you refresh the map. They're randomly distributed throughout the zip code. So the dot isn't sitting exactly on someone's home because you don't want to expose someone's private location like that. There's a very real danger to that. You know, it's finding the right balance between being visible but not too visible.
The first time that she showed us the map, I think that honestly, I had a little bit of tears in my eyes because it was so beautiful, right? It's so beautiful to behold your community in such strong numbers, in such an overwhelming proportion on the map.
One challenge is if you have too many variables that you're trying to map, and you want to represent them as like 17 different colors, it's actually really difficult to read that as a map. But I didn't want to, you know, categorize the languages that were not the most common as just other languages. I really wanted to try to avoid that. So something that I did kind of as a like a workaround or kind of an in-between was we had the top 5 languages or the ones that were the most common with the data set that we currently have as colors. And then I grouped the remaining ones. But when you zoom in on the map and you select a zip code, a pie chart pops up and it shows every single language and how many people are associated with that, even if it's just one person. As you open it, you see all of these red, green, yellow, blue, and orange and purple dots kind of scattered about. So we have the dark background, and then we have the glowing dots that come forward that represent indigenous lives.
Being able to see all the red of the Zapotecs on there, because we knew that they existed, but we could have never proven it to you by just us telling you about our community. Like, it wouldn't have been as widely accepted as knowledge if it wasn't based on the data that we had collected.
What you can do is you can turn different languages on and off, and then you can also zoom in and you can interact with the particular zip code and you can see all of the different languages. And so, for instance, like if I zoom in on the map here, I can select a particular zip code and it will say Indigenous language speakers in 9006. And I can see that there are 798 Zapotec speakers and then, you know, 23 K'iche speakers and on and on.
Rimpiin Don Velasquez. Hela can be we chimigna. Hela ishim ulo. Rinchapal are le K'iche. Rtsig ringan can be are le ahuanik. Has kupir ahuanik. Ahuanik are kupir kawah kiwech. Konohel rktat knan koke kushchawe. Shukuhe rktat knan kotke kushchawe.
When Indigenous peoples aren't included in a data set, it functions as a type of statistical genocide. So it's not a misnomer to call it a statistical genocide. If anything, it's a misnomer to just say like, oh, it's just missing data. What we measure is what we value. So it sends the message, you're not valued when you're not counted. We weren't counted before, but we're here now. And we're counted because this is a map that emerges from Indigenous women. And I think that it's also a way to not just document loss or document death. It's an active celebration of Indigenous life. Each of these glowing dots here is a life that has a vibrancy to it. There are languages that accompany each of these dots and people. And, you know, each of those languages have their own worldviews and cosmologies, and all of those are valued. And we see that.
For us, we knew, like, it was important. It was important for us to be the people that created that knowledge. It was important for us to see ourselves on a map. And I really love seeing the reaction of different people that message us on Instagram, that message us on our website, that were like, oh my gosh, like, I'm Chinantec. I see myself on the map. I can't believe it. Like, that's my family. And it was so beautiful to hear all these stories of people feeling seen. I think that sometimes it's taken for granted being able to see yourself reflected on maps or on media or on in different spaces. And I think that this map really is a celebration of life. It's a celebration of culture. It's a celebration of identity in a way that I think that tries to hold space for the different Indigenous migrant communities that exist in Los Angeles.
Tene inkaba angel, tene ukaba inkahale kankap Yucatan. Kit anekteng le mayatang ito kagenu hatosiwo kito shotane le tutande na ukawa yabila.
When we saw that we were able to use it to advocate for a motion to be passed in Los Angeles to start counting Indigenous people in the Department of Child Services, we didn't know that that was going to happen. You know what I mean? When we started seeing that we could advocate for resources like the vaccinations to be on site at our offices, we had no idea that the possibility of the map could do that. It really goes to show the importance of data when it comes to creating visibility and access to resources for communities. Understanding things in a language that you understand is a human right. It's something that should be afforded to you. Like when you go to your court hearing, you should know what they're telling you in a language that you best understand, as well as the courts, the hospitals, the educational settings, because of course, it doesn't just end at the border or when you go to your asylum court case. Like, language is always going to be present. You're always going to need things said in your language so that you can best understand it and make the most informed decision you can.
Every once in a while, I get opportunities to teach about, you know, maps and critical cartography. And I often use this exercise where I have a quiz. And I have several different items on a PowerPoint screen. One is the green book. Another is a set of wood carvings. Another is your typical world map. It's even labeled the world political map. I have a dot painting, There's also a structure of sticks organized in a particular way. And then I have a small clip of a bee kind of wiggling and moving around. And so I'll ask, you know, which of these items, A through F, are a map? And oftentimes, the most common response is just C, the one that's labeled world political map, where in reality, all of them are actually maps. All of them are geographic information systems. You know, they portray different ways of how do you move through space? What is your relationship to a particular space? So one is how to move through Jim Crow era places safely. Another, the carving is actually a map of coastlines. And in wood form, it means it can float. You can read it in the dark. The structure of sticks isn't just a structure of sticks. It's a map for sea navigation. And then, you know, lastly, for Cisna dances. It's a type of map. That dancing isn't just, you know, for nothing. It's for communicating a way to, this is the how you get to this flower patch. It's something that I use to illustrate that spatial technologies aren't limited to humans. They're not limited to, you know, people who sit at computers. And, you know, they're not even limited to Eurocentric ways of thinking. When we think of, oh, what was the first map? You know, it wasn't Columbus era New World maps. We've had maps a lot longer that are a lot older than that.
The We Are Here map of the Indigenous diaspora in Los Angeles is featured in the Mixpantli exhibit at the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. The exhibition showcases the works of contemporary artists and map makers who challenge dominant narratives about place and belonging. This episode was produced by Victoria Estrada and edited by Marta Martinez. It was mixed by Gabriela Baez and Rosana Caban. The Latino USA team includes Andrea Lopez Cruzado, Daisy Contreras, Mike Sargent, Julieta Martinelli, Reinaldo Leaños Jr., Alejandra Salazar, Patricia Zulbarán, and Julia Rocha, with help from Raúl Pérez. Our editorial director is Julio Ricardo Varela. Our director of engineering is Stephanie LeBeau. Our senior engineer is Julia Caruso. Our associate engineer is JJ Carubin. Our digital editor is Luis Luna. Our fellows are Elisa Baena, Monica Morales, and Andrew Viñales. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, you can find us on all of your social media. Y acuérdate, no te vayas. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by
the Libra Foundation, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative,
and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Like, what are we going to do? What are we going to... I hate this dog. I know.
Support for Latino USA comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/latino. That's odoo.com/latino. Odoo, modern management made simple.
From PRX.